Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. Today on the Quest Podcast, I'm talking with Kirsten Riggs, a 24-year-old from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who was diagnosed with Friedreich's ataxia at 16 years old. Today, Kirsten has turned her own experience with rare disease into advocacy using her work in her own social media and at BioNews to help raise awareness, build community, and help others feel a little less alone. But our conversation goes well beyond diagnosis. We're going to talk about growing up with a progressive condition, independence, relationships and dating, navigating changes in mobility, and what it means to build a full life while leaving room for both the hard things and the hopeful ones. Kirsten, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk and share a little bit about my advice and experience living with FA.
Absolutely. Well, you are a bright light, and I know our listeners are going to love this conversation. So I'm going to dive in with the first question. You were 16, like I said, when you were diagnosed, you were a varsity cheerleader. For listeners who may not know your story, take us back to that time. What was happening that eventually led to your diagnosis? And what do you remember about being 16 and suddenly having this new information about your future?
Yeah, so it was during the summer. I was a varsity cheerleader, so I was practicing. I could do all these backflips. I was the girl who would get put in the air, balance on one leg during cheer. At the time, my mom kept saying that my sister is meandering when she would walk, and she went on a cruise for her senior trip. The heat was really getting to her. She was holding on to the rails going up and down the stairs, and so my parents were doing all of these tests on her, and they couldn't quite figure out what was going on. But my sister learned the balance test at the doctor's office, so she would come home and practice it. It's where you close your eyes and hold your arms out, and if you sway, that's an indication that something is wrong. And so I would watch her do it at home. And I would do it, and I would sway, and I was like, what my sister is going through, I'm going through it too. And my parents were like, you're just trying to get attention, this is really serious, going through something, you don't have it. And I was like, okay. And so then someone, I forget what doctor, but someone was like, this is a neurological disorder, you should see a neurologist. And no one in Tulsa really knew about a lot of things, like the pediatric neurologist, because she was still 17 and then she turned 18 later in the summer. So the pediatric neurologist said she was normal. My primary care doctor was like, no, she's definitely not. And so we went to Houston. That's when my parents heard the words Friedreich's ataxia for the first time, but they wouldn't tell me because they didn't want me to look it up. They looked up FA, they realized it was genetic, and they were like, oh, Kirsten wasn't lying. They tested my sister for it, and there was a 2-week span of waiting, and then they told me that it is something serious. We're not going to tell you what it is, but they tested my reflexes and my legs, because with FA, you don't have reflexes and kick back. So I could just tell by my dad's face that I had what she had. And so The test came back for her. It was positive. So they finally told me what it was, but I wasn't sure if I had it, but I figured I did. So I waited for 2 weeks and it came back positive. So they got me into like a clinical trial the next morning. It was kind of funny because it was like Halloween weekend. My test results came in Friday, so my parents knew I had it, but they didn't tell me till Sunday. To have like one last weekend without me knowing. And then they told me Sunday night, and they were like, by the way, you're flying to Florida in the morning for a clinical trial.
Wow. You
Yeah.
know, I have so many thoughts listening to your story. I think a lot of times parents are in such a hard position when their kids are going through something like this. And I'm sure it must be so hard to know how to guide your kids through something like this, what to say, what not to say. What was going through your mind, like knowing that? Yes, your sister had something, but you couldn't know what it was. Did that make it more scary or less scary? Did you understand why they wouldn't tell you the actual name?
I understood why. I feel like I was very just like numb and emotional. I
Yeah.
remember like going to cheer practice and just crying, and everyone was like, "What's wrong?" And I was like, "I don't know yet. I don't know what's
Oh.
wrong." And I remember because if both parents are carriers, you have a 25% chance of getting it. So I remember going to a football game, and we were in the bus, and I just kept seeing the speed limit sign, 25% or 25 speed limit, and it just kept reminding me, and it was like all I could think about.
Sure.
But I, yeah, it was just like, I don't even know. It just felt kind of numb.
Wow. Was it confirmed through a blood test? Is that how they ultimately diagnosed both of you? Okay. I haven't spoken to a lot of people, one or two, but not a lot of people where both siblings had the same condition. What was it like to have a sister who understands FA from the inside? From what I've heard from you and understood, your experience and your progression aren't identical to each other. What tell me what the sibling experience has been like for you.
So I will say, like, when we were first diagnosed, it was hard to have a sibling with it just
Yeah.
because we handled it completely opposite. I
Ah.
did not want anyone to talk about FA around me. I didn't want to be reminded of it. I didn't want to think about it. And my sister, she was like, I want to advocate. I want to raise awareness. I want to post it to everyone I know. And I didn't want people I know asking me about it. And I just didn't want the constant reminder. So it was a little difficult at first. But now that we are adults and we both have like, adult things going on, like dating
Yeah.
and work and navigating difficult conversations, having a disability, it is amazing. Obviously, I don't wish that either of us had FA, but
Sure.
it is very nice to have that community of people who understand because I can ask my sister, hey, I'm going to use a walker for the first time and I'm terrified. Like, if someone's rude, like, how do I navigate that conversation? So,
Yeah.
yeah, which my sister and I, our progression is very similar, which it's actually not common for like siblings to have similar progression. It just
Oh, okay.
happened that way. She's 2 years older than me, so I'll say like I mimic her, like if we were the same age. Like I'm 2 years behind her on progression. Now, I will say I can walk a little better when she was my age just because I move around a lot. So if you use it, you'll be a little more coordinated.
I see.
But yeah, it's been amazing having a sister to go to.
There may be people listening that are in a similar, like, sibling type situation. Are there things you wish you had done differently in those early days to support one another? Or, I mean, it's your journey, it's your story. And, I'm a big believer that the way that things happened is, maybe the way that they were supposed to. But looking back, is there any advice you would give to somebody in this situation?
Yeah, I wish we would have been closer when we first got diagnosed, but she also went off to college, so we weren't around each other. But also, being 16 and 18, your perspective on life is a lot different. And I wish we would have given each other advice earlier on. And I should have talked about it more. But everyone's journey is completely different. And I tell people this when they're newly diagnosed, plug yourself into the community when you're ready. Because I went to my first FA event 2 weeks after I was diagnosed, and it really scared me because I did not know what to expect with FA. And so I like hid in my little hole for like 4 years, and now I'm the biggest advocate. My FA community is there for me. Like it, I'm so blessed to have my FA community. So it's just like when you're ready, plug yourself in.
Yeah, I think community, I love that you said that because community and connection is so huge when you're dealing with something like a rare disease, and knowing other people who are going through something similar is such a help. And I've said it before, I think the neuromuscular community is one of the most welcoming, supportive communities that I've ever had the pleasure to be a part of. It's like you said earlier, it's a mixed bag because you wouldn't wish for this, but I think the community is one of those bright spots that comes about as a result of it. That's it's been my experience. But I think you're right. It's an emotional journey. And I think it's really important to listen to yourself and what you need and do things when you're ready.
For sure. And I was like going through something like a week and a half ago, and I was really sad. And it was an FA situation where someone said something to me. And I'm in a FA group chat with 100 people, and I tend to be super positive about FA. So when I say something that I'm going through something, got like so many texts, like 8 responses in the group chat from guys and girls giving me their perspective. Like, people call my personal phone, and I literally cried because I was like, this community is beautiful. Like, I just gained a second family and a huge community. And I'm like, these people care about me so much. And like, even one of my friends, I've only met her once in person, and when I said something in the group chat, she like kept following up with me to like make sure that like I was okay. And it just meant the world to me.
It's amazing. I had a similar experience. I do a lot of advocacy work also, and I went on a trip once and had a really rough experience flying, and I posted about it. And Kiwi Cat Wells, who's a prominent disability advocate, she's wonderful, and I've had the pleasure of getting to know her a little bit. And she sent me a text and was just like, "Hey, we're here if you need to talk." And it's this open-armed community that's incredible. I'm curious, you talked about being kind of fearful early on, and when did that change? Like, how did you go from being kind of afraid and overwhelmed to being just a few short years later, this incredible advocate that's, sharing your story and doing such a service to the rest of the community?
It's kind of a mix of things. I went to an FA neurologist, and he told me that everyone's progression is different. So do not compare yourself to other people. And he told me that he doesn't think I'll ever get the heart condition that comes with FA cardiomyopathy. And so that was a big weight off my shoulders, because, well, I mean, online it says there's a life expectancy, and reading that is scary. Don't pay attention to that. Like, I don't think you'll get the heart condition. And he told me, I wouldn't be surprised if you're still walking in your 30s or 40s. And so I was like, oh, like, okay. Like, I shouldn't compare myself to what the internet says, like 5 to 10 years after you have symptoms, you'll lose your walking. Like, it's different for everyone. So that helped me have peace with FA and not freak out so much. And I'm very helpful about treatment and clinical trials. And I fully believe that there's going to be a cure someday. I really hope for one. And as far as advocacy, I think what drove my advocacy was frustration. And I went to a bar and grill one time, and I was on vacation, and I'd been shopping at the outlet malls, and I tried to order a beverage, and the bartender was like, I'm not gonna serve you. You just like stumbled to the bathroom. And I was like, I have like a neuromuscular disease. And he just kept shaking his head, and he was like, I don't care, I'm not gonna serve you, which this has happened before a few times. And I'll tell the bartender, and they're just like, I'm so sorry. And they feel so bad. But this guy was really rude, and it fueled like advocacy in me. And I made a TikTok talking about this situation, and it actually blew up and got millions of views, articles written about it. But the comment section, some people were like, if you have a disability, you shouldn't be out drinking. And like reading the comments, that's what like really sparked my whole journey. And I had other people with disabilities reaching out and sharing their stories. And I was like, okay, like this is what I want to do for my career, is spread awareness to disabilities and make sure people know to be kind to everyone, because you never know what people are going through.
Yeah, so true. I hate that that happened to you, but I love that you've turned it into something so positive and useful. After your diagnosis, you started thinking really intentionally about choosing a career that you could continue doing as your FA progressed, not knowing exactly what you might be looking at. How do you plan responsively and effectively for what a progressive condition might bring without allowing a future that hasn't happened yet to dictate too much of the life that you're living today?
Yeah, I'm really a planner. So I just like when I was 16, I was like, okay, we're gonna figure this out now before college to get a degree to support my future. And at the time, I was making TikTok videos. So I already knew that I liked social media, and I studied marketing. And so I was like, I want to do social media marketing. And I knew I could do it remote, and I started my own company out of college. And so it was almost like freelance work. So I had like different clients, and I would run their business, social media. And I knew that would be great for fatigue, because I can set my own schedule and it's remote. So I can go to doctor's appointments across the country and bring my work with me. And I just fell in love with it. And I think it's also important to do what you love, because you spend more time than not working. So I worked with BioNews. They were someone I contracted with, and they offered me a full-time job, which we advocate for over 50 rare diseases. And I am very passionate about helping people who have rare diseases make money. And so it's kind of funny because my title is Influencer Partnerships Manager. So I control a budget each month and I get to find different content creators with these rare diseases and pay them to make social media videos for us. And if someone doesn't really know how to make a video, I have like a huge outline script of like different topics they can talk about. And sometimes I'll like edit people's videos for them if they don't know how to do it. But I like feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, like paying people who have rare diseases to like help spread awareness, because awareness is great, but also I know how hard it is to have fatigue but want to make money. And I give people 2 weeks to get the video to me. So it's like we are flexible.
Yeah, that's incredible. You're really giving people a voice, and helping them use their voice, which isn't easy for everyone to do, but it's such a gift when people do it. You recently, I think, had the experience of using a mobility aid while traveling, and that's a transition that I know can carry a lot of emotion. What was that experience like for you? And did it change the way that you think about mobility aids or independence or accepting help?
So I have like a wheelchair walker that I brought with me on vacation. It was on a cruise the first time I used it, which the cruise was a rare disease cruise. So it was a
Wow.
great like tiptoe because everyone understood like we're all in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
So I realized like when I was on that cruise, so many people were like talking to me like strangers, and no one cared that I was in a wheelchair. So that was
Yeah.
like the perfect, like getting my toes in the water. And then the second time I used it, I went to Nashville, and it just made life so much easier because I went to New York the year before, and I was with, well, my ex now, but we walked like 4 miles. And so he was just like holding on to me for support, and that was difficult. And so bringing that wheelchair walker was so much easier because I can walk myself, but then when I want to sit, he'll just push me. And so it made life more fun to like
Yeah.
be able to like not be so exhausted traveling, and everyone treated me normal, which I was shocked. And then that gave me the confidence to use my walker in town because I still live in the same town that I grew up in. So it's like people
Oh.
know me, and I really went in the deep end using my walker because I went to this St. Patty's Day festival and I saw everyone, like boys I dated in high school and like old friends, and like everyone was still coming up to me and talking to me, and it was like no one like cared about the walker. But when there was a curb and like I was walking towards it, people would be aware and like help me get my walker up. People would be aware to give me space because I meander without a mobility aid, so I kind of need space. So I was like, this is so much easier. And there was like a little dance floor, and I love to dance. And so me and my friends went to the dance floor, and I brought my walker, and I was able to sit in it when I was tired. And people included me like in this little circle. We were cool.
Oh,
So
I love it.
it was easier.
Yeah, that's really great. And I've heard other people as well say that, there can be a lot of resistance to those mobility aids and sort of what they initially believe that they represent, but that once they make the transition and give it a try, it opens doors and, makes things so much easier. I love how you talked about being able to conserve energy by using it, and by extension, I think that means you can experience more things, which is
For
great.
sure.
And by the way, I love cruising. I think cruising is one of the most accessible ways to travel for somebody with a mobility-related condition like ours. And you know, it's everything you need is right there. You get to see lots of cool places, you know, get some luxury while you're at it. So
right.
I think it's really fun. You've talked about something that I think is going to resonate with a lot of our listeners, the fear that people might stop inviting you places because they think that your disability will slow them down. How have you navigated that feeling? And what would you want friends and family members who are listening, what you would want them to understand about inclusion that they may not realize?
For sure. So this is something I really feared when I graduated high school, going to college, because I still wanted to experience college and have friends and go to the games and do everything. But like, to be realistic, like, I have FA, and so I am going to slow people down. So having a strategy, it was really helpful. So I was very intentional about my friends. I knew I needed to have good friends who were understanding, and I was super upfront about my FA when I meet new people, and my friends were amazing. I found my group of girls, and they just knew, like, we might have to Uber instead of walk around campus, and that's okay. Or they knew we need to leave 10 minutes early because we're going to have to stop and let Kirsten breathe or sit. And everyone was holding my arms. And then when we would go out, my friends, we would get a table and I would sit down. And if they wanted to stand, they would stand around the table or sit with me. And so everyone was just so kind and supportive. I had the best college experience. And then now that I'm not in college, I have the same friends that were my friends in middle school, so they just grew up knowing my FA, and everyone's just so good with it. They know to plan accessible things. They know if it's not accessible, I'm going to bring my walker, so I do have a place to sit. And yeah, it's just been amazing. I have definitely came across people who were not understanding, and I never hung out with them again. I'm just like, well, they don't know. So I'm not gonna waste my time teaching them. It's like, people are either, they get it or they don't, and so you just gotta find the people who get it.
I think it can be, again, one of those gifts that helps you weed out the people that you really want in your life and that you want to be close to and share things with. I believe that, you know, the vast majority of people in this world are kind-hearted, good people. And I think that when you're getting to know someone and you have a disability, I think it really, you see the humanity in other people and the kindness. And I personally think that that's one of the other gifts that comes about from living with one of these conditions.
Sure.
Yeah. There can be such a fine line, though, between support that feels empowering and help that actually takes away some of our independence. How do you communicate what kind of help you need? And what would you tell family members, friends, partners who genuinely want to help but aren't always sure when to step in?
Yeah, so I was actually talking to my mom about this the other day. So 2 years ago, I told my friends and family, if you see me struggling and it looks like I need help, just step in and help me. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want people to, like, bring attention to, like, oh, you have FA, do you need help?
Yeah.
I just wanted people to help because they were, like, being nice. And so I told my mom, like, when we're going on walks and I look stumbly, just link arms with me. Because normally I'm, like, yapping and I'm, like, talking and I won't even, like, realize. But then if my mom were to be like, Kirsten, you look stumbly, do you need help? Like, that would, like, make me be like, oh, like, I have FA. And so that's how I navigated it a few years ago. But now that I need more help a lot, I think I need to have a conversation again with people. Because, for example, when I go to the lake, like, getting on the boat, I can probably do it myself if I grab onto the bar and like step on over into the boat, but no one gives me a chance to try. Everyone just grabs me and puts me in the boat. And so I bring that up because when I'm by myself, I have no idea if I can do things or not because I know I can get my walker in the car, but everyone puts my walker in the car for me. So then when I'm like, oh, I want to go somewhere by myself, I'm like, if I get there, can I get my walker out of the car? So I think I need to tell people, I need to start trying things on my own to see if I can be independent with these things, but be on standby if I can't.
I love that. I think your mindset about it is kind of empowering because, you want to do things on your own and be able to go places by yourself and all of that. But yeah, you might need a trial run with somebody, like you say, kind of standing by.
Right.
So I like the way that you're thinking about
Thank
that.
you.
Yeah, you've also talked about medical appointments and how your parents would sort of jump in during those appointments and they wanted to help, but eventually you asked, I think, to be the person who speaks first. What have you learned about finding your own voice in healthcare? And, what advice would you give others about being a self-advocate in those settings?
Yeah, so I definitely recommend people writing down questions before the appointment. I recently had a doctor's appointment and didn't think about it and then left the appointment and I was like, well, that wasn't very beneficial because I didn't have my questions ready. So questions really help. My parents are very smart and think about a lot of things, so I do like them to be at my appointments, but I remember last year at an appointment, my dad just kept going on and on about things that, like, I was at the doctor to, like, figure out. I was having, like, some, like, heart episodes and I wanted to figure it out. And then he was educating the doctor on clinical trials. And I was like, Dad, stay on track here. And so we had a conversation after, and I'm like, y'all need to let me talk. And so my parents were like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know you had anything to say. So communication is key. So I just told them, like, can I talk first? And then you guys answered your questions. And so sometimes they do that, but sometimes they forget. And I will be so straight up. And I'm like, Mom or Dad, I have a question. So I'm like, sometimes I just gotta use my voice.
I think a theme that's emerging here is, and I feel like it should be a book for how you approach just life and the world in general. You said communication is key. And I think that would be the title of the book. So maybe there's a book in your future.
Yes.
Let's talk about something that people love talking about, relationships and dating. How has FA affected the way that you approach dating, whether it's deciding when to talk about a disability, allowing someone to help you, dealing with assumptions, or just figuring out what you need from a partner?
Yeah, this is like my favorite topic.
Oh,
I
good.
love talking about dating.
It's
So,
so fun.
okay, so I'm single right now, but I've always had long-term boyfriends. I've had like three long-term boyfriends. And before, when I started dating all of them, my FA wasn't visibly noticeable. So I was able to go on a date with them and tell them towards the end of the date. That was kind of my strategy. And I wanted them like to get to know me and not rule me out immediately because I have FA. But now that I'm single, last time I dated, I didn't use mobility aids. Now this time I'm like, I either need to bring my walker or so, like they have to help like hold my hand when walking around. So I've been trying to figure out my strategy. And so I am on Hinge. It's like a dating app,
Oh,
and
you're going to go get so many messages after this.
I made my profile and did not disclose FA, and that was a mistake because I would like match with someone and then text them, and then I had to tell them about FA and see if they accepted it or rejected it. And actually, the first guy I was talking to was so sweet. And he was like, yeah, like FA's totally fine. And he was like, let's FaceTime later so you can tell me more about it. We FaceTimed for 4 hours and I was like, this conversation is so good. And so we went on a date and it was great. He ended up lying about his age, so that's not gonna work.
Oh no. Was he way
But
older than he said?
younger, way
Younger.
younger.
Oh
I know, it's kind of funny. But that was like a great, like getting my toes in the water. And he told me, he looked me up on social media, so he already knew about my FA and educated himself on it. So what I
So
learned from
sweet.
that experience is having a FaceTime call before the date helps me feel a lot more comfortable with FA. And so then there was this other guy I was really interested in, and I texted him about my FA, and he said he was fine with it, but I could tell he was a little hesitant. And so we FaceTimed, and I told him more. And the next morning, I woke up to a text, a long text of him saying that he didn't realize it was progressive and it was just too much. And that text broke me because I've never been rejected for FA before, to my face at least. No one's ever told me that. So, and that was always my biggest fear of n not being able to find someone because of my FA. And so that's what I sent in the FA group chat. Like, I just got this text. I'm dating again. I'm really sad. How do I navigate this? And so I switched my dating profile. I put a picture of me and my walker on there and I described it a little bit. And I was scared. I thought people are gonna see it and they won't even want to get to know me. And I woke up the next morning with 50 plus likes. And I was like, wait, like people don't care like I thought they would. And then I got the sweetest text from someone. He said that he saw one of my FA videos online and he really wants to get to know me and my story more. And I was just like, there are good people. And like putting it out there is so much easier because if I get rejected now, I will never know. Like all they have to do is X my profile. So yeah, that's where I'm at in my process of navigating FA. But I've still met so many great guys despite having FA.
Well, I, again, so many thoughts. First of all, I've kind of been off the market for a long time now. But I dating under the, for anybody, it's dating is hard and rejection's not fun. And I know that when I was dating and on the apps and things, I wasn't interested in having my time wasted, And so I know that it's something that a lot of people struggle with knowing what to do. And, do I put the picture? Do I not put the picture? And, I put the picture because I knew that, again, it was going to weed out the people that I wasn't interested in getting to know either. They weren't going to be my people. So I think oftentimes you're so bright and positive, and I think that that can actually be pressure that gets put on us a lot of times to be positive or resilient all the time. What do you do with the days when FA is just hard? And have you learned sort of strategies for how to change your mindset or pull yourself out of a dark place?
For sure. So I will say, I am a very happy, positive person.
Yeah.
What you see online is definitely me. I would say I'm like happy 97% of the time, and then like 3% of the time I do have my bad FA days. It is so normal. If you fall, if you get rejected dating, like, you are going to have those hard days where it's sad. Now, I like to call my friends. I like to talk it out. I like to cry. Crying is so important, because if I cry, I'm like good after my cry. If I don't cry, I will hold it in for like a few days and kind of be down for those few days.
Letting that emotion, you know, kind of honoring it almost and letting it be what it is. I think that that's really important. Your professional life and your advocacy have come together in a really interesting way. You use social media, like we've talked about, to raise awareness about rare disease. And you've even had someone say that seeing one of your videos helped put her on the path toward an FA diagnosis. What does it mean to you to realize that sharing your story and your experiences could have that kind of impact?
Yeah, it means so much to me. Just being able to like be there for other people through this super hard diagnosis, because I remember when I was young and just got diagnosed, I just want to be there for people. But I had no idea posting videos about FA would help someone get diagnosed. So what happened was, there was this girl, and she knew something was going on, but she didn't know what it was yet. And she had a neurologist appointment booked for like a week or two out. And her cousin came across my video and said, "This sounds like what you have. You have the same movements as her. You sound like her." And so she sent it to the cousin, and she was like, "Yes, this is what I have." And so she showed the neurologist, and the neurologist was like, "This is so rare. Like, I doubt you have this." It came back positive. So, yeah, she got diagnosed with FA from my video, which is so crazy to think. And I am just happy she has a diagnosis so she can do clinical trials and get on treatments to help. And now she's one of my good friends. And I texted her last week about things. And yeah, I'm just having that community is amazing.
Yeah, that's so great. If you could go back and sit next to 16-year-old Kirsten, who had just heard the words Friedreich's ataxia, and who had no idea what her adult life was going to look like, what would you want her to know now?
I would want her to know, quit freaking out, because you were about to have the best time of your life. I freaked out initially, but then I really had the mindset of like, well, if you can only walk for 10 more years, make it the best 10 years you can. And I had fun. I mean, I traveled and I just experienced so many fun things, and I was like, never say no to doing anything. And yeah, I just live my life like a movie. Like, I just try. I think life is like this big opportunity and this big adventure to like find fun. And so I definitely have that mentality. Now, I think it's very important when someone is newly diagnosed. A lot of people find me on social media and reach out to me, and I give them my phone number. And I call them, and typically they cry and they're scared. And I'm just like, that's how I was. But just know, like, your progression is going to be different than everyone else's. Like, you are still going to have so much fun in life. You're just going to have to find accommodations to be able to still do the things you love. But like, every single person on earth, like, has some sort of thing that they struggle with, and this is just ours. And it's hard, but we're human, and this, like, you can still live life to the fullest.
For sure. I swear, I want to hang out with you like once a week, and I want to learn how to live my life like a movie. I love that. I feel like that's another book. So
yeah, I would definitely say I have this playlist called Vibes, and it's like just a whole bunch of happy, euphoric music, and I'll play it in the car, play it when I'm working, and my brain is just like, life's so fun.
Oh, that's so great. I love that for you. That's Thanks. Amazing. Yeah. So I have started kind of ending interviews with a couple of just sort of fun, rapid fire questions. And so I have a few for you, if that's okay. I'm wondering first, what's one thing that makes your life with FA easier that you wish you'd discovered sooner?
I would definitely say communicating with people. I feel like before I used mobility aid, for the longest time, I tried to not tell people and just fit in and struggle with FA in private. And it's a lot easier communicating that I'm going to need help, instead of like awkwardly standing there and like waiting for other people to realize that I'm struggling.
Yeah, I love that. That gave me goosebumps a little bit. What's one thing that people can do to be a better friend or ally to someone living with a disability?
I would say inviting me to things, and planning fun things to do, which my friends have been great at that. Just, you know, making sure life's fun still. Which, like, I love card games. So my friends will come over and play games, and like, that's accessible because I'm not really leaving my house. It's like, that's super easy. And yeah, I just find friends that have similar interests to me, and I have got involved in a church group, and bringing my walker is a lot easier because, like, my friends know to, like, put it in the car. And, like, last night, we had a church night last night, and we were, like, standing up and worshiping, and I was like, I need to sit down. And so, like, someone was like, oh, let me, like, turn your walker around for you so you can, you know, see and not have to, like, turn in your chair. So, yeah, people just being, like, aware and, like, making life easier with FA is really, like, heartwarming.
I think with me, I don't think this is an actual love language, but when people take the time to notice something about me or something that I need or that's maybe not obvious but is going to make something easier or help me participate, that, like, makes my heart explode.
Yes.
It's my absolute, I think that's one of the best ways someone can show me that they care about me. I love
that.
Sure. Yeah. So finish this sentence. I wish more people with disabilities gave themselves permission to.
I would say stop putting so much pressure on yourself to show the world that you are capable of so much despite having a disability, because I know I am capable of a lot, but I put so much pressure on myself.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I have FA. I have to show people that I can still be a workaholic. So, like, I started two businesses and I worked full time, but had like three side hustles going on. And yeah, it was just like, it was a lot. And I just felt the need to prove that, because I always worried, like, dating, I would have to bring more to the table because, like, I'm lacking, like, mobility help, like, around the house. Like, I really needed to step up in other aspects. But I put way too much pressure on myself because, like I said, everyone has their struggles, everyone has
Yeah.
their things. This is mine, and I don't have to like overcompensate in other areas because of it.
That's really good. That's really, really good. I know that I've been guilty of, almost trying to prove what I can do, and sort of bite off too much, because I want to show people that I'm so capable. And, the fact of the matter is we are capable. We don't have
Right.
to prove anything. I love your answer to that question.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time and for being here. I hope this won't be the last time. I hope you'll come back and we can have another conversation.
I would love to. I had so much fun talking with you today, and thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. I will look forward to continuing to watch your journey on social media. We're going to put all your contact information in the show notes so that people can find you and also watch your journey. So, thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.